So maybe I should ask, is there anybody that needs from the department needs to present today instead of tomorrow that we should go to, or should we just keep going down our list?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Sure.
If we could follow back up on the preserve proposal on page 36, we failed to mention, or I failed to mention, the fee structure piece of it. We didn't talk about what that fee should look like pertaining to both the resident and non-resident. If we could just get some ideas from the commissioners as to what type of, you know, fee that we could use towards habitat programs and habitat enhancements, that's what those license dollars would be used for. So it would be a license fee. But on the proposal sheet, we do not have a fee listed because we wanted to have that conversation with the commission.
If you just need, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If you just need some ideas, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, what's simplest and what we already have in place, and it may or may not get past our legal counsel or make it some of our lobbyists nervous after the last session. But why wouldn't we just take anybody that wants to participate in the unlimited and put them at the regular non-resident charge that we have in place right now for people that want to hunt on private or public lands, and then make it mandatory that they also purchase the habitat stamp. I think that would get us $70 or $75 more in revenue. We would show great outreach for those the habitat dollars and the habitat fund that the habitat stamp is going to work for. And makes it simple and takes the bureaucracy out of it.
Yeah, no, that is something actually we talked about, Commissioner Olson, with John Kotelnik. And John, if you want to just shed some light on some of your concerns there, that'd be good.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, again for the record, John Kotelnik, staff attorney. Commissioner Olson, we definitely talked about that and explored that idea, and it would be ideal. I mean, it would work really well, but for the statute that was passed to authorize the habitat stamp had a specific prohibition of requiring a habitat stamp to hunt on a PSP. So I'm just not sure how we would get around that statutory requirement. I mean, I can certainly do some more research if you want, but, you know, when we first had our initial conversation, then I looked at this a couple of weeks ago, I didn't see a way around it then.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I can't further research the issue if that's one of the routes you guys want to propose, but as an alternative, maybe have a secondary idea out there as far as a fee.
Yeah, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sure.
And I don't want to be argumentative, John, but as you know, July 1, when the laws go into effect that the last legislature passes, their open season for this new batch of legislators that are going to be coming back to peer next year. And again, I think that those were probably negotiated in by preserve owners to not want to participate in that habitat stamp. And I think the ones that want to participate in the unlimited shooting would more than happily pay that or require their guests to pay that habitat stamp on their behalf to be participate in this program. We can find out, and we'll hear very soon from them if they're not willing to do that, but I think that that's just an easy plan, and to me it sounds like a slam dunk.
Commissioner Olson, we'd be glad to take another look at that, and we definitely will look at some of those options. Just so I'm clear, though, the endorsement piece, essentially that license would be that habitat stamp. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
As far as the gateway to that, well, and plus there's the different charges in there from the preserve license to what the non-residents pay.
Well, that license fee is actually the same. So a small game non-resident license, that I think it's $126 or something like that, is the same fee that people buy on and off of preserve. And if somebody were to buy that non-resident small game license, that license is valid on the entire preserve, during the entire preserve season. Even though it's only valid for 2 5-day periods off of preserve, it's valid for the entire preserve season. A preserve license, there's a 1-day, a 5-day, and an annual. Essentially, those are different tiers. I think it's $46, $76, and then I think the annual is the same price as the non-resident small game. there's a few options there for preserve hunters to purchase, depending on what type of trip they want to plan to hunt. Is it just a preserve? Is it one day? Is it five? Is it on and off a preserve? Those types of questions. So if we were to do the endorsement, the $25 habitat stamp, we could add it to the one day, the 5 day, or the annual. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be how I would see that happening, I guess.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Honestly, if they're going to come in and go over their 20 and they're paying $30 to $50 a bird, in addition to that, the $25 on the front end is not going to matter to them. Easy way for us to track habitat stamp increase sales too.
Yeah, if it's purchased with a preserved license, that would be, it would be, yep.
Maybe it should be higher. I don't know.
And again, Mr. Chair, I guess that was something I was just kind of throwing out there too. Again, if the idea of requiring the habitat stamp for this enhancement, if ultimately, you know, we conclude that it's just not legally feasible, is there another price out there that the commission wants to throw out for public comment or
could we do this? Could you give us a sheet with listing all these pertinent fees and how they apply to preserves and who has to buy what and what they currently are? And
yes,
I assume the department has a couple options too. We could put Russ's option on there, and if you guys have one or two or three. I mean, it seems like we might be at the end of the day, and it's kind of hard to get to something on this particular issue.
We can definitely provide that list for tomorrow's meeting, circle back, and have a little more time to provide a proposal, if you will, of those prices.
Is that okay, Commissioner Olson?
And it's me. I just wanted to help out and throw out an idea just to keep the conversation going.
Sure. No, I like the idea, and we'll make sure that one's included, so thank you for that.
Yep.
Absolutely. Thanks, Commissioners. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right, so does anybody need to present today from the department because they're not here tomorrow? Is there anybody like that we should get done today? Apparently not. So,
I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks, Tom. If we go a little past five, should we just keep going down the list? Bobcat hunting? Or maybe that's too long. I can't tell how long that's going to be.
Mr. Chair, I think we can probably do that. We've got a brief presentation and the proposal probably in 10, 15 minutes max.
All right, let's do that.
So with that, Keith Fisk, I'm the Wildlife Damage Program Administrator with Game Fish and Parks. And before we get into that Bobcat proposal, Chad Lehman, Senior Wildlife Biologist out there in Custer State Park, is going to talk briefly about some ongoing research and a little bit of history on the management of bobcats. So with that, Chad Lehman, if you're out there, you've got a presentation going.
All right, Mr. Chairman, Commission, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, Chad Lehman, Senior Wildlife Biologist. I work with research and management of bobcats statewide, and I'm going to give a brief presentation on some research and harvest information here this afternoon. Next slide, Chris. This is just a slide of some harvest data with some specifics here related to season dates. In the past few years, we've typically had our season dates run from December 26th through February 15th west of the Missouri River, and a somewhat shortened season east of the Missouri River with season dates running from December 26th through the later part of January. Some recent harvest data. We harvested 462 bobcats in 17 and 18, 335 bobcats in 18 and 19, and 220 bobcats this last year. That report's not yet available, and that's just some raw data there to share with folks. Next slide. Here we have some Black Hills harvest data. You can see that the data there typically is run in the last few years. We've been between 40 and 80 bobcats harvested in recent years. And next slide.
Yep. Just hold on. Computer locked up. Awesome.
Chris, you just want me to run off my end?
I don't think you can.
Okay. I can just verbalize the data too if you want.
Chad, it looks good now, Chad.
Sorry, I had to remove a participant.
Okay. So let's go to that Black Hills slide. There you go. Like I said, recently we've been between 40 and 60 bobcats harvested in recent years. We have seen a higher harvest back in the early 2000s. Approaching 120 to 140 bobcats in the Black Hills. Okay, next slide. Western Prairie Harvest, this is where we typically have our highest harvest occurring out on the prairie. In recent years, we've been harvesting between 150 and 400 cats, depending on the year. Next slide. And then our Eastern Prairie Harvest, we typically harvest anywhere from 5 to 10 cats to 30 to 35 cats, depending on the year. Some quick research information. We've had several studies conducted on bobcats over the state. We had a study that we did from 2013 and 16, and we found our annual survival rates were 65 to 75%, which is a decent survival rate. Typically, anything below 60% could possibly be additive mortality. So that's kind of the threshold researchers are looking at there. In the Black Hills, research there shows we're at about 70 to 75%, similar to what we found on the prairie. So decent survival there. And we're going to continue to monitor adult survival in the Black Hills. It's turned into a pretty almost a long-term study now. We're getting a lot of great information. And we're also just initiated a kitten survival study, so we're going to fill that critical information void as well, and we'll have more to come on that. Next slide. We also have some statistical population reconstruction information. Now, what this does, this provides an abundance estimate for bobcats statewide. And in 2018 and 19, we estimated just over 2,500 bobcats statewide. And based on our harvest data then, that's a statewide harvest of 13% of the population, which is lower than the reported harvest threshold of 20%, which would be considered additive by some other folks that have modeled bobcat populations. Okay, next slide. This is a HSI or a Habitat Suitability Index model that was developed from some previous research that we conducted from 2006 to 2010. And what we've got here depicted statewide is a probability of use map, which uses geographic spatial data. And we also had some GPS collared bobcats where we evaluated use sites versus random sites. And what you're seeing there in the red and orange would be higher probabilities of use. And those are areas typically with higher terrain ruggedness, more woody vegetation, and on the prairie habitats, more high upland vegetation. And so you can see that obviously most of our suitable habitat is in the Black Hills and west of the Missouri, but we also have some areas there along the river, East River, and also the Prairie Coteau, and a lot of our major river drainages also have some suitable bobcat habitat in the state. Okay, next slide. And then this is just a brief overview of the East River seasons for changes over time. We first started our East River season in 2012 and 13 with five counties. And those season dates I briefly mentioned already, end of December through late January. In 2015 and 16, we added five counties, and that's on the map there to the right. So we've steadily increased the areas where we're able to hunt bobcats and trap bobcats east of the river. However, the one bobcat per hunter and trapper regulation has stayed in place. Next slide. So, Mr. Chairman and Commission, if you'd like, we could have Keith go over the recommended proposal, and we could take team questions, or we can go over questions now if you'd like.
Why don't we have Keith continue, and then we can take questions over all of it?
Sure. Again, this is Keith Fisk, Wildlife Damage Program Administrator, and Chris Hall, you can click through. That's the last slide that we have. So, folks, turn your attention to item number 39 in your packet if you're not already there. What we have before you is the bobcat hunting and trapping season. This is a two-year recommendation. As Chad alluded to, right now our season dates run from the day after Christmas to February 15th in western South Dakota, and then a slightly shorter season in eastern South Dakota, ending there on the third Sunday in January. Just as a reminder, as Chad alluded to, people that participate in that East River season are limited to one bobcat per hunter or trapper. And then, of course, statewide, regardless of where your bobcat's harvested, you do have to check that animal in and get it tagged with the CITES tag that a department representative attaches to the pelt. So the recommended changes that we have before you today are two changes. The first one there is we're recommending to modify the season dates there to match up so we have the same consistent season from West River to East River. So we would essentially extend that East River season to align with West River to go all the way to February 15th. That said, we want to retain that harvest limit of one bobcat per hunter or trapper for folks in eastern South Dakota, just to take a little bit more of a conservative approach there because they're not as plentiful, obviously, as they are in western South Dakota, simply to because of the available habitat. And then if you'll look at your sheet there, the recommended change from last year, number two, this was an item that a private individual had contacted Commissioner Olson originally on, and we reached out and talked to that individual, lives south of Mitchell, and for a number of years here has had incidentally captured bobcats and his sets in areas that weren't currently open. So that started a good dialogue with our staff and taking a look at the open area. And after kicking this out to our field staff and our wildlife managers, we brought forward the recommendation that you see before you there is to expand that East River season to include all of eastern South Dakota. So essentially the bobcat season, if this was to move forward, would be statewide with that harvest limit in eastern South Dakota only. Obviously, there is bobcat habitat in eastern South Dakota, primarily along the Missouri River, the James River, and then the Prairie Coteau up in the northeast. We've had a number of incidentals and also sightings over the years in a lot of different areas in eastern South Dakota. And we thought, you know, what better way to increase recreational opportunity for individuals to take an animal, a unique animal in their area if they so have the opportunity to do so. So with that, you'll see those two recommended changes on your sheet, and we would ask for your favorable approval. And again, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to take those.
Questions? Comments? Motions?
Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Spring.
Has there been studies in East River like there was in West River in the last 10 years? Some of the studies were here in the counties close to where I live. I knew the young guy that did the study, and I was just wondering if South Dakota State put on a study in East River or not.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Spring, the most recent research that we have there in eastern South Dakota would be that study that Chad alluded to back in the late 2000s. I think that wrapped up, if I recall, in 2010 or 2011, and it was primarily on some counties there directly adjacent to the Missouri River, Charles Mix County, some of that area in eastern South Dakota, but that's the most recent.
Any other questions or comments?
I would make a motion to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
There's a second. Any discussion? If not, Rachel, would you call the roll, please?
Beath?
Aye.
Boyd?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor.
Thank you. I know we're a little after five.